Good morning, and welcome to our Middle East Cross-Cultural Chapel. Fresh off the plane from Rome, we hope to give you a small taste this morning of what we experienced this past semester, but also to start our own processing, as it is going to be a very long journey. As you're walking in, some of you may have been hassled by some soldiers. Such checkpoints and the separation wall between Israel and Palestine are everyday parts of the people's lives and were very impacting to our own experience, so we wanted to give you a taste of what that's like. Another continual theme throughout our trip, and we are realizing throughout our lives as Christians, is the theme of movement.
Okay, we began at the EMU library parking lot, where we then flew from D.C. to Cairo. From Cairo, we then traveled to Mount Sinai, where Moses received the Ten Commandments. We then boarded a ferry from the Egyptian border to the Jordanian border, and then to the famed Petra ruins, which you may remember from the Indiana Jones series. From Petra, we crossed into the Israeli border, into the West Bank, where we would spend 3 weeks with Palestinian host families in a town next to Bethlehem. After our stay in Bethlehem, we crossed over to the other side of the wall to study biblical sites and Judaism for several weeks in Jerusalem. And when our time in Jerusalem came to a close, we migrated to Kibbutz Afikim in the northern Galilee to live and work with the community of Israelis. From the kibbutz, we traveled to the Arab city of Nazareth to serve at a replica of a first-century village, which would have served as Jesus' childhood home. And beginning in Nazareth, we began to focus on the message, life of Jesus, the message of his moving witness. So we listened to his message and followed Paul and the Christian movement into the Mediterranean, where we settled in Athens, Greece. And from Athens, we then finally settled into Rome, where we watched how the Christian movement evolved and centralized at the Vatican. And finally, we met many of you last night when we arrived back at EMU. So thanks for welcoming us back and for your support throughout our journey.
We now have a few skits to give you a little taste of some of our experiences. Throughout our travels, we discovered that store owners in the market sometimes had ulterior motives when offering discounts to our female group members.
Hello, Shakira. Would you like some scarves? Everything is $1 million. I have four wives. I need one more.
Everything is free.
Three beautiful flowers. Why not a beautiful scarf?
Special discount just for you.
During our time at Kibbutz Afikim, different members of our group performed a variety of tasks, some of which were more difficult than others. Some of us worked in a dog kennel. Some of our group worked with the cows. Some of our group worked at the cafeteria. Some of our group worked in the garden. A couple of us worked at the coffee house. Some of us worked at the hotel. And a few brave girls got up very early every morning to work in the banana fields.
Even though we were across the ocean, we still managed to keep up on news from the States.
Guys, you will never believe this. Guess what I just found out?
What?
Justin Steiner is dating. And I just checked
Now we thought we would share a taste of all the things we've experienced this semester in the form of a numbers list.
Please note that some of these numbers may have been exaggerated to increase their comedic impact.
Number of scarves bought.
114.
Number of countries visited.
Egypt, Jordan.
Israel.
Greece.
Italy.
Baghdad.
6. Number of really old things seen.
7.
1,000.
Check out that tell, it's first century.
That's so lame. Show me something that's 8,000 BC.
Number of miles walked.
5,280. Number of people who completely escaped sickness.
0. Number of people who were pickpocketed.
0. Number of holy sites we inadvertently disrespected.
Say holy of holies.
Holy of holies.
70 times 7. Number of days Christina was sick.
Get the med kit.
22. Number of papers written for 15 credits?
2.
Just floating in the Dead Sea.
We're getting credit for this.
I'm riding a scooter on a Greek island.
We're getting credit for this. 4 scoops of gelato for dinner. We're getting credit for this.
Number of romantic relationships formed.
0.
Amount of money spent on souvenirs.
$24,632.19. Number of hours spent on a bus.
153. Number of pictures taken.
39,654. Number of poor facial hair attempts.
50. Number of camels who died on their way to our great camel riding extravaganza.
3.
Number of inside jokes you'll never understand.
You guys might want to stay out of the bathroom for a while, it's not good.
79. Number of memories made?
Infinite.
On the last night of our program in Rome, we had a special meal, and Linford and Janet gave each one of us an anchor pendant on a necklace. The anchor is a symbol that was used by the early church to represent Jesus. The church is a ship, and Jesus is the anchor. I think this image captures well what we learned this semester about following Jesus. For we believe in a Savior that calls us to pick up and move. And when we sail on life's seas, we are at home wherever we have our anchor. So this semester, we learned about the movement of people trying hard to follow this God. We traveled with the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt, through the wilderness surrounding Mount Sinai, over the Jordan River into the Promised Land. We journeyed with Jesus in the land of Israel, living for 3 weeks near his birthplace in Bethlehem, spending time in Nazareth, his boyhood home, exploring the Galilee, where he lived out his ministry, and descending down the slopes of the Mount of Olives into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday. We celebrated a baptism Easter morning in the Jordan River. We sang in ancient cathedrals and in ruins of Roman pagan theaters. We worshiped on top of mountains and in the wilderness. No matter where we were, we could make space to worship God. This cross-cultural taught us a lot about a way of living, traveling light so that we can go with this man called Jesus from a humble village in the beautiful Galilee. Jesus is the anchor, the foundation of our faith, and it's a moving foundation. We cannot stay still and settle. Following Jesus means movement, and that means taking risks and having an adventure.
An understanding of the current Middle East conflict is deeply rooted in its history. After 3.5 months, we've barely scratched the surface of that history, and you have about 45 seconds. So I'll hit the high spots. Groups like to begin the history at a point which legitimizes their claim to the land. The Israelite kingdom reached its peak under David and Solomon, encompassing most of the modern state of Israel about 1000 BC. 1,000 years later, the Jews were driven from the land in the diaspora by the Romans. In the 7th century, Arab armies conquered the region, and Islamic Empire ruled for 1,200 years. Following World War I, the British gained control of Palestine, and with the Balfour Declaration, Jews began returning home. In 1947, the UN Partition Plan carved up the region of Palestine into a Jewish state and an Arab state, both of which were non-contiguous and not very sustainable. Israel declared independence, and the neighboring Arab countries attacked. Israel survived the attack and extended its boundaries beyond the partition plan. Subsequent wars in 1967, 1973, 1982, 2006, along with the first and second intifada and periodic violence, have introduced a culture of war, distrust, and fear in the region. Land is holy. Boundaries are unclear at best, and perhaps the greatest issue in all of the peace talks. All have legitimate claims. All have been wronged.
This soil is my blood, the trees my history of toil. I belong here, just as my family belonged here. From the rich orange groves on the shores of the past to the old keys hanging on my hope for a return of the future, this is my land you have taken.
From dust to dust, from the Lord's command, I live and breathe and dance on the land the Lord has given. I belong to a set-apart people with a 4,000-year-old covenant.
I have a right to this land. Our land has been stolen, our houses knocked down. We are refugees. Retribution is not what I desire. Relocation is not my need. I just want to be acknowledged a right to live in my country and breathe.
I have been an exile for most of my history. This land is my own heart, these people, my nation and family. If I can't call this place home, I'll wander forever.
I know displacement.
I want a home.
I'm imprisoned by an apartheid wall, sending a message of distrust and humiliation. I've been tricked into thinking your presence would not remain. So, with my hands tied behind my back and my land taken inch by inch, I will resist in whatever way I know how.
I set a wall, a necessary evil, to protect myself so I'll never fall victim again. I hold this land with all my strength, and I will teach my children to do the same.
A barrier divides us and our land. My Muslim history is rooted here.
My Jewish history began here.
This land is holy. No one hears our cries for help. We're not all terrorists.
No one wants me in their land. I'm not a disease. The world is against me.
Will my children be proud of their heritage?
Will my children be safe?
I fear the future, but hope for peace.
This land is not mine, but it is holy. I know no walls like you. Displacement is a foreign feeling. To say I fear it untrue. What is my role for the future? To help, what must I do? I'll strive to keep my hope alive by remembering those I knew.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets, who were before you.
Upon first arriving in Palestine, we stayed for 3 weeks with host families near Bethlehem. I think I can say for all of us that it was definitely a major highlight of our trip.
Not only was it an incredible introduction to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, but it was also a chance for us to spend 3 weeks in an amazing Arabic environment with awesome people who really became like family.
Beit Sahour is a small Arab Christian town. And by small, I mean it's made up of four main families. Monica and I were actually cousins.
So when our huge EMU group arrived, we were kind of a big deal. We made a large impact in the community that we were soon a very loved part of. Our families accepted us with open arms as we embraced their culture and way of life.
I had the privilege to stay with a young family, with siblings aging 11, 7, and 1, something I wasn't used to. But by the end, I was comfortable playing Dutch Blitz 5 times a day and watching baby TV. I was even able to witness my 1-year-old brother take his first steps. And before we left, he was walking all over the house.
My family also included 3 younger siblings, Barhum, Yasmin, and Amir. We drank a lot of tea and had many heartfelt discussions. Every night with our parents, we ate a huge, delicious meal. Our mom was the best cook in Beit Sahour. And we huddled together around our little gas heaters and talked for hours. It was amazing.
Our time here in Beit Sahour was unforgettable. Through our relationships and time living in the community, we developed a true love for the Palestinians and the Palestinian cause.
We arrived in Beit Sahour without much knowledge of Palestinians or the current situation in the Middle East. Soon after our arrival, Israeli soldiers killed a 17-year-old boy in nearby Bethlehem, and there was a suicide bombing south of us in Dimona. As these terrible acts were occurring around us, I was confused and couldn't understand the reasons behind such acts of violence. Prior to our arrival, the situation was the calmest it had been in years, and we are witnessing the escalation of unrest. Tensions continued to rise in Gaza with Hamas and in Lebanon when Israel was suspected to be behind an assassination of one of the Hezbollah leaders. We learned more and more about the history of this region, and it seems like violent times have been more frequent than peaceful ones. Our time in Beit Sahour brought us new friendships and a desire to be sympathetic to the Palestinian cause, though we had yet to meet with many Israeli opinions.
One of the most challenging parts of the trip for me came when we met with a Jewish settler named Artie. I knew beforehand that I wouldn't agree with what he said, but I was still surprised by my reaction. I'm not someone who gets mad very often or very easily, but I was mad at the settler. In fact, I was so mad that I kind of scared myself. But I just couldn't believe what Artie was saying. When talking about the Israelis firing back at Gaza and killing innocent people, he said, "I'm not apologizing for it. We have to keep doing it as long as they keep firing from within their population centers." He said that nothing the Israelis are accused of compares to what the Palestinians have done to them, and then blamed Palestinians for starting the killing of innocent civilians. These Palestinians he was talking about were my new friends and family in Beit Sahour. He didn't even know these people he was accusing, and I wondered, "God, how can I love him?"
Later, there was a shooting at a yeshiva in Jerusalem. 7 Israelis and the Palestinian shooter were killed. After this, 4 men in Bethlehem were killed by the Israeli army. We were able to hear ideas and concerns about security from Israeli lecturers, though many of their extreme concepts about safety did not make sense to me after meeting so many Palestinians who desired peace. How could both sides of this mess have logical supporting arguments? It no longer felt like there was a right or wrong side. Both groups have seemed capable of gaining my friendship and committing terrible acts of violence against each other.
I wanted to hate Artie and settlers and anyone else who supports the oppression of Palestinians in the name of security. Security, security. That's all we seem to hear about from the Jews we talked to. But as we met more and more Jews in the coming days and weeks, I realized that I couldn't hate them, and I could even begin to understand where they were coming from. They're just worried about their families, their kids' futures, their grandkids' futures, and even though that doesn't excuse their ignorance or tolerance of such oppressive security measures like the wall, I can begin to understand. I understand that there are many more than just 2 sides or perspectives to this issue. and I'm beginning to be able to see little pieces of myself in each of them.
Rula, Palestinian.
As I was driving home today, I got stuck in a crowded checkpoint. All the cars were trying to get to the front of the line, completely blocking everything. Suddenly, a Palestinian ambulance drove up, lights flashing and sirens blaring. I panicked. My car was blocking their path to the front of the line, but I couldn't move. Everyone was blocking me too. What was I supposed to do? It took forever for the ambulance to get through. Later, I heard that the young woman in the ambulance died. She died because of a checkpoint. I felt so helpless. What could I have done? I also feel responsible. My car kept them from getting through the line. But why should I feel guilty? It's not my fault the checkpoints exist. I suffer from them just as much as anyone else. I'm so confused. Even more, I'm angry. Every day, I'm oppressed by the Israelis, even though I'm not interested in doing anything to harm them. Why should they be able to determine who lives and who dies? How can their arrogant soldiers lazily check ID cards while an innocent person lies dying in an ambulance? I don't like violence, but I want justice. Can we have justice without revenge? Can we have freedom, or will this oppression last forever? When will this end?
Ruth, Israeli soldier.
Some days I hate my job, hate being in the army. Today a young woman died at the checkpoint. I can't help but feel guilty, but I was just doing my job, wasn't I? I tried to get the ambulance through quickly. There was such a traffic jam. But when it got to the front, I still had to search it. I'd like to believe that there's no bomb inside, nothing to worry about. But what if? What if the blood of 5 fellow Jews is on my hands because I failed to carry out the search and a bomb is smuggled through? I can't live with that, but I can't live with this either. I find myself doing things that I hate. I'm so confused. I hate watching each car, each person file through, wondering if they are the next suicide bomber, the one who will take the life of my mother, my sister, my brother, or my friend, in the name of the cause. Don't they realize the futility of it all, and that it's because of them that people have to wait, suffer, and die at checkpoints? When will this end?
Firas, brother.
That's it. I'm done. Enough of this pointless charade. I hate them. I do. I heard all the stories and tried to remain detached and peaceful, but this is too far. She died today. My sister died today. They killed my sister. I'm so confused. Why her? Why my sister? There were plenty of people there to help her. It was an ambulance. Surely they would let it through. It's those soldiers. They don't trust any of us. None of the Jews do. They hate us. And now I hate them. Suicide attacks used to seem pointless, a foolish way to strike back. But now I see how satisfying it could be. I don't care about my life anymore. My family is broken. My life is ruined. I might as well take as many Jews as I can with me. This is insane. When will it end?
Rachel, Sutler.
I heard on the news that an Arab girl died at a checkpoint today. My first reaction was sadness, of course. I hate hearing about lost life on any side of this. But now Arabs are using this to say the checkpoints and separation fence are cruel and unnecessary. They're so wrong. I would know. Those things protect my life every day. What is Israel supposed to do? Arabs keep killing Jews, so we keep protecting ourselves. We all want peace, but security is the most important thing for Israel right now. How can Arabs blame us for that girl's death? They make the security measures like checkpoints necessary. Doesn't that make it their fault? Maybe they're angry at Israel, but I'm angry at them. I wouldn't support the wall or checkpoints if I didn't feel as threatened as I do. They've taken so many Jewish lives, but no Jew killed that Arab girl. The soldiers didn't shoot her. They were just doing their jobs. And you know what? I'm grateful to them. They keep me and my family safe. What if the ambulance had a bomb? Don't you see? Sometimes we have no choice. But now I'm afraid. Will a suicide bomber decide to take revenge? Is my life more threatened now than ever? And if so, whose fault is it really? I must admit, I'm so confused. Right now, it feels like we will never find peace. When will this end?
Mecha, Israeli.
I don't understand. Why do things like this happen here in Israel? It should be a simple process to get through a checkpoint. The soldiers just need to check and see who and what is crossing the border. It's straightforward, and the ambulance can just go to the front of the line. I'm so confused. No one needs to die. I've heard that sometimes soldiers slow up the process, but surely they wouldn't hold up an ambulance. Security measures like the fence and checkpoints make me uncomfortable, but they give me the peace of mind to know that my family and I don't have to live in constant danger. I'm sorry that it complicates the lives of all Palestinians, even those that can be trusted and just want peace. But is there any other way? It's those extremists that make these measures necessary. If they would stop attacking, then we could stop this cycle of conflict. We could all live in peace. All our families could have security. No one would have to die. When will this end?
Carissa, Christina, Daniel, Maggie, Aaron, Kate.
Students.
It's complicated. I realize that.
They don't respect each other. They don't trust each other. They don't love each other. And both sides has over 60 years of evidence for why the other should be blamed.
What can be done? What can I do?
It looks hopeless, but there is so much hope. People on both sides are doing great things to bridge the divide. But still,
I'm so confused.
How can a few extremists on both sides overpower the vast majority?
Why don't the governments do anything?
Can't they see peace would benefit both sides and that many on each side desire that peace?
But neither side wants to give anything up. Compromise shows weakness.
Instead, they fight.
When will this end?
Our trip left us with confusion, doubts, and sometimes anger. But even as we continue to struggle with difficult questions, we still find many reasons to hold on to hope. I have hope because of the optimism of my host parents in Beit Zahor.
I have hope because of a conversation with a shopkeeper in Jerusalem.
I have hope in the resiliency of the human spirit.
I have hope in my Muslim and Jewish brothers and sisters.
I have hope in the next generation.
I have hope in the nonviolent grassroots efforts we learned about.
I have hope because of Jesus of Nazareth. His kingdom looks different from our broken world.
Please pray with me. Dear God, we come to you today with full hearts, many questions, and rich memories. I thank you for our safe return from this life-changing experience into the arms of a caring and supportive community. I ask that as we begin to reconnect and share our stories, it might be a meaningful and blessed experience. As we attempt to reconcile a world of barbed wire, checkpoints, and suicide bombings with a world of comfort, wealth, and privilege, grant us peace. As we attempt to understand places of seemingly never-ending cycles of hatred and violence, grant us hope. As we interact with different faiths and systems of injustices we don't agree with, grant us understanding. As we interact with people of many colors while following Jesus around the world, grant us love. May you grant each of us life and abundance. In the name of Christ, amen.
We'd like to ask Lynn and Janet to come up.
Our fearless leaders, without you, this trip could have been a catastrophe, but instead, it was a great success. We couldn't have asked for better leaders to travel around the Middle East with. It's been such a privilege to journey with you this semester. The thought and care that you put into planning and the attention to detail has been evident in every move we've made, making transitions meaningful and purposeful. Thank you for the hours you've put in behind the scenes to make our experiences rich and full.
We appreciate the freedom you've given us to make mistakes. In keeping your hands open, you've allowed us to learn for ourselves how to become effective world travelers. In addition, we've appreciated your gentle direction and guidance in showing us how to live cross-culturally. Introducing us to this type of lifestyle has opened doors of possibility for the future.
You have both been incredible models in the way of Christ, especially by building bridges with people from each place that we've traveled. Your example offers us hope for building peace in the world. Your enthusiasm, wisdom, and laughter are gifts to all of us. As we've struggled with complex situations, you encourage us to keep asking questions and wrestle with tough emotions.
You are right that in letting go, you receive much more. Thank you for teaching us to live in the present, yet to stay anchored in the promises of Christ wherever we are. We pray that we will continue to bless others as you have blessed us. May you continue to have life in abundance. And we have a few small gifts to show our appreciation, of course.
and a picture of our toga party in Greece.